Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Still under lockdown. It's been 6 years. And so because of how long it's been, we've decided, you know what, we're going to mix it up and give you something to get you excited in your morning. And today, that is Ben Dixon, journalist, progressive activist, and hope of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Ben, welcome back to the Damage Report.
John, it is a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
We're super excited to have you here. You know, it would have been awesome to have your perspective on literally any day in the news, but man, we've got some big stories today. Breaking news with the Supreme Court, you know, a wave of violence against protesters, really scary signs for the pandemic. It's one for the history books that I wish was in the history books so that I wouldn't have to be experiencing it in real time.
I love that. I cannot wait until we can look back on this time. I'm just not really interested in living through this time. I want to see us in about 5 years when it was a thing of the past.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be 1 year into President Carlson's administration.
Right. No.
Oh, you said right.
Anybody but Trump, except for Tucker Carlson.
I mean, that's
you caught me on that one.
That's what all the articles are saying. That's what they're all saying. You think America's too good for that? I don't know.
I don't know. I think Tucker Carlson would be is the evolution. I think that's the next step. So as much as I hate it, I think we are an ignorant enough country to take them on, to take them.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I'm worried about that. Well, everyone who's already here in the chat room on multiple platforms, thank you for being there. Feel free to hit the like button. If you're on a platform that has a like button, that would be nice. You can share the stream, of course. And if you'd like to comment along, send us tweets at hashtag TDRLive, or you can send in super chats. We'll be responding to those throughout. Before we even launched, Tony D had sent in a large super chat just saying free reality winner. Thank you, Tony. Don't hear much about reality winner in the news, not for a while now. And Rob Shively sent us a super chat saying, hell yeah, Ben and John, two of my favorite progressive voices. Also, I love seeing more representation of color out there. Thanks for being amazing. Thank you, Rob. By the way, if you haven't already watched the main show yesterday, we have an announcement. As of right now, if you have a Samsung TV, you can find TYT on Samsung TV Plus channel 1032. The Young Turks is on there, The Damage Report, and your other favorite TYT shows. That's channel 1032 on Samsung TV Plus. I'm sure that the channel numbers are sort of based on when you get on the platform. I have to say that not being in the top 1,000 hurts on a fundamental level, but we are there if you'd like to see us on Samsung. Anyway, with that, Ben, why don't we jump into the news?
Sounds good. Let's do it, man.
Okay. I woke up and I knew it was going to be a big day, although I wasn't sure why. As soon as I saw a tweet from our president just saying prosecutorial misconduct. Now, I am not super tapped into the SCOTUS watch, so I didn't know that there was a big case coming today. That was my first sign. But there was a big one and a big decision with the Supreme Court today clearing the way for prosecutors in New York to see President Trump's financial records, a stunning defeat for Mr. Trump, but a decision that probably means the records will be shielded from public scrutiny under grand jury secrecy rules until after the election and perhaps indefinitely. It was actually two decisions. So in a separate decision, the court ruled that Congress could not, at least for now, see many of the same records. Both votes were 7-2, with Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. writing both majority opinions. And oddly enough, it's the two Trump appointees who were against both of these. But anyway, I have thoughts, obviously. But Ben, I'm curious, what do you make of these two decisions?
You know, it's a continuous theme, right? Some of the only good news that we've gotten in this pandemic has come from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And that's been a surprise, especially because of the conservative bent of the court. Chief Justice Roberts has regularly shown that I believe he's putting the interest of the court, the validity of the court, first and foremost. I think that's what he's doing. And, you know, I'm not quite sure exactly how long that will play out, right? I think our luck is going to run out. I really am interested, particularly in the case with Donald Trump and his tax records, right? I think that is really the one that's shaking him up the most. And I'm interested in seeing obviously what's in there, but like how far reaching does this go? Like what are the real ramifications of this? And that's why Donald Trump is of course doing what he does. He's crying, you know, crying foul as he normally does.
Exactly. And we'll have a little bit more of his reaction in just a minute. But yeah, I'm curious about that too. I mean, the case involving Congress, apparently we're not getting that resolved anytime soon. The one with the New York investigation, even that, hypothetically, we might not have for some time. And so I guess what I'm curious about is, I got one or two tweets with people saying, you know, I can't wait to see your reaction. And I worry that I might disappoint people, because I think some fans will think I'm going to be excited because we're finally close to getting his records. But I don't know. I feel a little bit weird about it. Like, as far as we've now come through this whole thing and now into this pandemic and all of that, I don't know. I wonder how much I care anymore. And more importantly, I wonder how much anyone will care. Like, at this point, what are we going to find that's going to, what, like, get through to his base? Like, peel away 10% of voters? I don't know what that would have to be. They're okay with tens of thousands of people dying. What financial stuff is going to sway them at this point?
No, I think that's actually spot on, right? There's nothing. When Donald Trump said that he can go on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, we did not realize how prophetic that would be. Like, he really, I mean, this base, he doesn't go below, like, what, 36-35% in terms of his approval rating, and that's his core base that will follow him to hell and back again. Yeah. So there's nothing that's going to come out of his tax returns that's going to change their mind. And I think you make a great point. Like, we're at the end of this, and the damage has been done, right? Of course, there's a long way between now and January, so if there's anything in this that, like, is an open and shut case for a second impeachment, then fine, but I don't know how that really changes the conditions that we're under now. Like, there are a lot of emergencies that are happening right now that I think you make a great point that this really won't have any bearing on.
Yeah, 100%. And I see people in the chat are saying, like, campaign finance fraud and stuff like that, and I totally get it, but we already know about that. Like, right. I have no doubt that we would find out about criminality. I have no doubt at all. I just wonder if it would matter. And to go even one step more meta than that, do we want it to be the story? Like, considering all that's going on and how bad it obviously is for Donald Trump politically with the pandemic and his decision to turn the entire election into sort of a referendum on race relations in America by viciously demonizing anyone who doesn't wear a red hat and have pasty skin, is it better for Trump to have this be about his taxes and his financial stuff? Because he certainly hasn't liked any of the news this past year. That seems more like comfortable ground for him. I don't know. Am I wrong?
So I don't think you're wrong. I think it's more of a testament to, like, how screwed America is, right? Do you remember at the beginning of his term where journalists kept saying, we can't let this be the new normal. This isn't normal. This is not the new normal. Well, yeah, it already was the new normal, right? We're at the point where we're so desensitized because of Donald Trump specifically. Like, America was already on a bad trajectory. And I don't want to make it seem like we're going to lay everything at the feet of Trump, but a lot deserves to be laid at the feet of Trump. And part of what needs to be laid at the feet of Trump is just the ridiculous amount of controversy after controversy after controversy. And because of how he manages controversy, which is to, like, say, meh, whatever, right? We didn't realize that meh, whatever was so freaking powerful, right? And then he has a base that's like, he doesn't care, we don't care. And that has put us in a place where literally nothing matters. Nothing matters with Donald Trump. He's going to keep getting that 35%. He's going to keep getting that 36% approval rating, and he's going to keep dominating the Republican Party. So I don't know. Like, I still kind of agree with you. Whether or not it's something that he's more comfortable with, I don't know. I just know that he's comfortable with not caring about anything. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, that's his invincibility power right there.
Yeah. By the way, I also want to say, I was corrected in the comments, and the correction was totally right. It was Thomas and Alito that voted against these. I implied that it was Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. So, commenters, plus one for you, minus one for me. Thank you for keeping me honest. I was just recollecting incorrectly.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies. debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I'm of the opinion that Trump doesn't actually politically mind his tax information being investigated, especially since we probably won't get it until after the election anyway. We probably won't get it for another 5 or 10 years. It'll be an interesting footnote when we do. But in real time, he is angry about all this. He tweeted, "The Supreme Court sends cases back to lower court, arguments to continue. This is all a political prosecution," which he is always against, going after political opponents. He'd never do that. "I won the Mueller witch hunt and others, and now I have to keep fighting in a politically corrupt New York. Not fair to this presidency or administration." He goes on to say, "Courts in the past have given broad deference, but not me." So, I don't know. I guess as little as I kind of care about this and as little as I think it will end up mattering for the presidential election, if it is causing him a little bit of pain in the short term, I can take some schadenfreude out of that, considering the state of the country, I guess.
I don't know. I hate this man. Right? I just there's and the reason I say it like that is because what else is there to say about this clown? What else is there to say about a man who is presiding over the deaths of 132,000 Americans and creating the conditions for even more to die? And yet he feels like he's the victim. Right. I spend so much time on my show trying to analyze things and trying to break it down to like what are the real motivations and behind their political machinations and stuff. But at the end of the day, man, F these people, bro. Like as soon as whenever he eventually and inevitably dies, I can't wait to take my turn to piss on his grave because they are literally the bane of our existence and they're going to get a lot of people killed. And I think it's just time up for even giving it. I have no civility left to give these clowns. I have nothing.
Yeah, no, I think at this point, considering all the damage that has been done since 2016, when, and I know it's hard to think back to the dark times before 2016, but things sucked then.
Exactly.
Like with all of that, I'm supposed to care about like being like polite to Trump? No.
Man, no. No, they just better be grateful that most of us still care about the laws. Right. We still are trying to preserve institutions. We're still trying to keep some sense of civilization and we're trying to work through the system to resolve these issues. But if you ask me what kind of respect I have for the president or the office of the presidency and Donald Trump, man. Well, anyway, I don't know what the rating of the show is. I'll just leave it at that.
We normally abide by TV language requirements, but we can edit in post if necessary, Ben.
Okay, it's not that important.
If necessary.
I'll preserve all the profanity for my show.
Okay. Everyone go watch his show to hear him go off verbally.
You saw how I slipped that plug in.
Exactly. By the way, I wanted to also mention that if this is something that really gets you fired up. And I understand why. If you care about law and order and you believe that Trump has committed financial crimes, whether domestically, corruption, stuff like that, or internationally, all of that, I get it. Trump isn't the only person that hypothetically you could be mad at. You could be also mad at some of the Dems who in 2018 ran on, "We're going to get the taxes." And then as soon as they were in office, we're like, maybe we'll get around to it at some point. And if they had been faster in that process, today's decision would have been the decision of 3 to 6 months ago, and maybe we would get the taxes before the election. Now, don't listen to me. listen to Alex Morris, great candidate whose primary election is coming up soon, said a real Democrat would have subpoenaed Trump's taxes on day one instead of delaying because he was more focused on cozying up to his Republican colleagues for votes on a bill to help his corporate donors. That is Richard Neal, who Alex Morris is running against in Massachusetts' first district. And yeah, Richard Neal had been sort of implying, like, you know what, we're going to go in there, we're going to get him, we're going to hold him accountable. And then he took a big, long nap as soon as they were in office. So I'm glad that Alex Morris is reminding people of that at this point.
Yeah, I like the way you frame that, right? As important as it is for us to get Donald Trump out of power, and quite frankly, any Republican across the let me frame it like this. The Democratic Party should be what the Republican Party is, right? The Democratic Party should be the furthest right that we are in this country. But we got to get the sociopaths out of power. As important as that is, there is so much culpability that the responsibility has to be laid at the feet of the Democratic Party, because one of the most frustrating things right now, John, is the fact that we don't have an effective opposition party to actually fight on our behalf against these sociopaths who are in power right now. And I'm sorry, when you have the House of Representatives, you're the Speaker of the House, if you're the Senate Minority Leader, you have a significant amount of political power. And I feel that not only those two particular leaders, but also the rank and file, there's just a dearth. There's an absence of leadership fighting on our behalf in some of our darkest hours. So there's plenty to be laid at the Democratic Party.
Exactly. It was a moment where we needed leadership, and thankfully we did have it, but not from the actual leaders. It was, you know, the squad and, you know, people affiliated with the squad that stepped up over the past few years. I also wanted to mention the Supreme Court today ruled by a 5-4 margin that nearly half of Oklahoma is an Indian reservation in the eyes of the criminal justice system, preventing state authorities from prosecuting offenses there that involve Native Americans. That is a huge decision. It's not one that I'm expert on, so we are reaching out to experts to come on and help us dissect this, but I did want to let you know that that is also super significant. We should acknowledge it, especially considering that much of the coverage, as you just saw, is going to be focused on these two cases. This is also significant as well. Situation with the pandemic in the US is getting hotter in a bad way recently. We once again broke records with a record number of cases in the US, also in the world. So once again, we are number one. But unfortunately, here is the thing about that right part of that chart that you're seeing. Is that the situation facing our frontline workers is unfortunately looking like the first big rise up on the left part of that chart, even though it was months ago. For weeks now, nurses have been posting online testimonials about a lack of PPE, with some given surgical masks instead of N95 masks because of shortages. In a video posted last week, a Florida nurse said she breaks the oath she took to, quote, do no harm every time she goes to work without protection and worries constantly she may be infecting her patients, coworkers, and family. This is not a limited thing. This is not just anecdotal. Demand for protective equipment has soared, but unlike back in March when efforts focused on getting PPE for major hospitals, especially in areas like New York, Detroit, and Chicago, supplies now are desperately needed everywhere. Primary care offices, nursing homes, prisons, psychiatric and disability facilities. As many states have continued to reopen their economies, demand has also surged from the construction industry and other sectors. With soaring demand, prices have skyrocketed. And so I recently had a doctor on and I asked him, what have we learned from the first time and how are we better prepared? And we are in some ways, but this is the same problem. You would think with months of time to prepare, we would take it seriously. We'd be prepared. But Trump checked out months ago. The funding has largely checked out months ago. And now, once again, these frontline workers, our heroes, remember, we were all calling them heroes, are now having to be heroic in the same way once again and risk their lives.
Yeah. You know, the thing about this moment that is most frustrating is the intentional actions and decisions that are being made by not just Donald Trump, but Republican governors across the country, and how irresponsible it is in that they are not only creating the conditions for us to make, forcing us to go back out, right? They want us to go out and consume, but then they're undermining anything that would help ameliorate the effects of this, right? We could have opened up the economy slowly but surely and carefully, but that wasn't good enough for them. What they've done is like saying, we want to open up the economy and create the very worst conditions imaginable. And that's where we see the increase, right? I think what was it 60,000 new cases yesterday alone. And yeah. and I'm just amazed at how sadistic this really is. Like, I can't imagine what's going through their minds, but I don't even care about trying to figure them out because it's all on purpose at this point. Whether it's ignorance, incompetence, or malevolence, the result is the same.
Yeah, or some weird stew of all three. Exactly. We talked about yesterday in the show, Tucker Carlson, he's like, schools have to open. Also, they shouldn't be wearing masks. There's no science behind wearing masks. It's like...
give us something, right? Like stop... you're literally creating the exact conditions necessary to maximize the deaths. John, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but this is what I did my show on today. And it is really at the level of fury. They are literally creating the conditions that are going to get people killed when, if they did the right thing, we could get even better results, right? If they took the steps that are necessary, people could not only survive, but if we had virtual learning, kids would learn better. I mean, there's so many things that we could be doing and innovating around in this moment, but instead of doing the better thing, they're doing the exact thing that's going to cause people to get killed. And yeah. I don't know, man, something has to be done about this.
I agree. And also, don't apologize. I brought you on to cut me off. If you wanted to get kids and their families killed from coronavirus, what would you have done differently in that Tucker Carlson monologue? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. You do that if your goal was murder. It's insane. You're not supposed to say it. You're supposed to be polite while they're right. trying to get people killed.
Right. That, I mean, what else are we supposed to say? That's literally what they're doing. And then if you add on top of it, right, the reason I'm so pissed off about it is because on top of this is the fact that none of their kids go to public schools.
Yes.
All of their kids are probably going to be homeschooled with a very well-paid, highly paid tutor to sit there and give them a first-class education while they are insisting on sending our children back out to public schools in situations where even on the best of days, schools are petri dishes. Like mm-hmm. We haven't gotten sick since we started quarantining because my kids aren't bringing anything home from school. Every sickness we get in this household comes from school, and that's on the best of days. And these people who have no skin in the game, literally, Betsy DeVos probably doesn't have anybody in her generation that goes to public school, but she's demanding that we go back to public school.
Exactly, exactly. And the people who have the most skin in the game, we're leaving them out. Teachers, yeah. I already saw local news stories starting to filter up of teachers dying over summer school from coronavirus. There was a Texas case of that. In terms of these nurses, doctors, other people in healthcare, 94,000 infections, more than 500 dead officially. The actual number is likely much higher. And now we're telling them, no, you need to do without masks once again. And in interviews, White House officials say concerns about PPE shortages are overblown. They said U.S. manufacturing and stockpiles of protective equipment have improved dramatically and are adequate in most states. Oh, good. Well, then I'm glad for doctors and nurses in most states. But in a survey of 23,000 registered nurses, National Nurses United found 85% were asked to reuse masks designed for single use. And a survey of over 14,000 by the American Nurses Association found nearly 80% being asked to reuse masks and 45% reporting shortages. Still. After months in the most powerful, richest country in the history of countries, they're still having to reuse masks and they're still running out of PPE. It is an embarrassment.
There's no excuse for it. There's literally no excuse for it. And while I hope that there is some journalist who's willing and has the stomach to actually investigate so that we can finally have a line between the stupidity that we're seeing, how we have abandoned our healthcare workers and we have no PPE. If they could draw the line to the cause and effect, we would appreciate that as a society. But for now, okay. Anyway, I'll stop there. But for now, they can all go to hell. Let's just stop there. Yeah. They can go to hell because what they're doing is killing people. And John, I will say this though, I wonder how much they expect us to tolerate. I wonder if they really feel like they can just get away with this without any repercussions whatsoever. Because, I mean, at this point, their decisions are directly harming us. and it's almost like a physical threat to our well-being.
Yeah.
And my the question in my mind is like, how much do they think the people could take?
Yeah. Apparently at least a little bit more than we're taking right now. And I think a lot of people are probably right on the edge, if not past it at this point. We're all shocked day by day as the number of cases continues to go up, sort of as people like Dr. Fauci have been predicting they will. It's past 60,000 in one day. And we've had one basic mission here at the Damage Report for at least the last few weeks, if not the entirety of the pandemic, is try to pat anyone on the right on the head who does the right thing on the coronavirus, acknowledges what's going on, encourages people to wear masks, even people I disagree with on literally everything, like Ducey and Jeanine Pirro and all of that. If they're saying wear masks, I'm going to give them credit. And to the credit of Fox News, they actually listed the number of cases and deaths. They almost never do this, but they did it recently for that new record. Over 62,000 cases in one day, over 132,000 deaths. And that's important because people are watching, and especially people who watch Fox News, this sort of information has generally been obscured for them. And so because people are watching, this is important. But also, one person in particular is always watching. And so right after that graphic aired, Donald Trump tweeted, for the 1/100th time, which is not, that's not how it works. I'm not a mathematician or anything. That's not how that works. The reason we show so many cases compared to other countries that haven't done nearly as well as we have, more people have died here than literally anywhere, just bear that in mind, is that our testing is much bigger and better. We have tested 40 million people. If we did 20 million instead, cases would be half, etc. Not reported. No, but that's, he means we're not reporting that fact. That's not true. No, if we had done less tests, they wouldn't be reported, but the cases would still be there, you colossal moron. Anyway, I know that it's probably pointless to even say this. Expecting that he's going to learn, that he's going to catch up is probably a waste of time. But with even Sean Hannity is saying wear masks and take this seriously, and still it hasn't gotten through to Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, there was a study that came out that showed that there was a correlation between either cases or death and viewers of Fox News, specifically viewers of Sean Hannity. So if nothing else at this point, they're like, okay, we're going to be liable for this. So at least let's give some accurate reporting on this. Which is one thing. But of course, now I like you pointed out that this is where Donald Trump is parting ways with his with his favorite news network. I have no idea what he meant by 1/100th. I was a math major in college for the first 2 years. Then I changed to politics. but I'm pretty sure that that absolutely means nothing. But what we see on a regular basis with Donald Trump, he continuously pushes this theme. And I wonder if he knows that that is something that he can use to maintain his 35%. So long as he throws him a breadcrumb. As long as he throws them anything, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. So long as they have a talking point on social media, they'll still back him up.
Yeah.
And so I think he's feeding his core, his trolls. He's feeding his base.
You're probably right. And by the way, you spent 2 years in math before going to politics. I spent 2 years in engineering before going to politics. Hashtag hard sciences exit.
Exactly.
Turned out it was difficult.
Yeah.
Like
turns out that I wasn't really good past differential equations. After that, it was like, it's time for me to get out of here.
You're going to give me nightmares just saying that. but yeah, you're probably right. And I'm glad that you brought up that that thing about Fox News initially, that people who watched Sean Hannity rather than Tucker Carlson, there were more deaths in that area. But it's been interesting that initially that story got Tucker Carlson some credit. Like for taking it seriously. I mean, sure, the way he was taking it seriously was just demonizing China. People sort of forget that part. But what's interesting is that Sean Hannity is now taking it way more seriously. Tucker Carlson is still saying masks are unscientific. He had previously, early in the pandemic, said, of course masks work.
Right.
And now he's moved away from that position, begging the question, why? What has changed that he's moved so far in the direction of encouraging people to be irresponsible when even dullards like Sean Hannity are now accepting that we need to take this seriously?
The dullards like Sean Hannity. I love that line. I have I'm curious. I have no idea the true motivation of Tucker Carlson outside of his own personal, I think, glorification. I think he's just looking out. I think he sees an opportunity, right? Where Fox News.
Yeah.
I think he's contrarian. He's a contrarian. And by being a contrarian, he's going against like Fox News in this case. But that opens up a lane for him at Fox News for all of the people who don't want to hear the truth from Fox News mm-hmm. to rally around him. So I think it might just be a career posturing thing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it might be. Donald Trump has a new campaign ad targeting those still protesting against police brutality and for reform of American law enforcement. There's something kind of dangerous about it, something a little bit irresponsible about it. See if you can catch it.
You have reached the 911 police emergency line. Due to defunding of the police department, we're sorry, but no one is here to take your call. If you're calling to report a rape, please press 1. To report a murder, press 2. To report a home invasion, press 3. For all other crimes, leave your name and number, and someone will get back to you. Our estimated wait time is currently 5 days. Goodbye.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
That is one of the most reprehensible ads I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. I think, so I have a bad habit of logically breaking these things down. Like, let's be realistic. The police always get there too late. First and foremost, they're never there in time to stop a crime. It's the rarest of occasion that they happen to be in the same place at the same time that a crime is happening and they can help prevent it. So first and foremost, that's it. What when we say defund the police, it does not necessarily include the detectives, the people who actually investigate crimes. Right. Yeah. I think people feel the sensation that without police cars driving and patrolling your neighborhood, that then your neighborhood is going to fall into chaos. I don't know where you live, but basically nowhere in the United States do you have to have police patrolling your neighborhoods for your neighborhood to be safe. In fact, there's a direct correlation, an inverse relationship between the more police that you have in your neighborhood, the less likely that your neighborhood would be safe for all kinds of factors, including poverty. But that's the logical argument against it. In terms of the ad itself, you know, it is right up there with the I'm trying to think of the ad that they ran against Michael Dukakis. I think it runs. It's a fear mongering, a level of fear mongering that we haven't seen in a while. And I think it's going to play well with this base because that's what they want.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Totally. It calls up the Dukakis thing. It's like, you know, the Tucker Carlson segments where he says they're going to be coming for you. The hordes are going to be coming for you.
Yeah.
Armed Black Lives Matter militias. I mean, we get the message that they're trying to send. I guess it's a small point to bring up, but it seems even more ridiculous that they're running that ad against Joe Biden when no matter what you mean when you say defund the police, Biden doesn't even agree with that. So,
yes,
like
I completely forgot about that. Joe Biden is talking about putting more money into the police. And just like here's the thing, though. Democrats need to realize something. And maybe they know it and they're just like going through kabuki theater. Right. They're just playing along, playing their part. But there's nothing that they can do. There's no level of cooperation, triangulation, or moderation that the Republicans won't vilify as something as terrifying and malicious.
Yeah.
Joe Biden literally wants to put more money in the police, yet they're labeling him as the, you know, abolish the police movement, which he's the furthest from. He's closer to the police union than he would ever be abolishing the police.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's like you idiot Republicans, you can already run against Biden on things like his support for the crime bill in the 90s and things like that. Now you're saying he wants to totally remove all policing, which is, I mean, I guess maybe some conservatives have the mental flexibility to be like, Biden doesn't want there to be any police, and Biden wants there to be police on literally every corner, totally interfering with people's lives at the same time, ad by ad. I don't know, but that's a weird way to attack Biden. It's obviously entirely disingenuous towards what the movement is actually pushing for.
Yeah.
And you rightfully pointed out, like, yeah, a lot of the times they don't show up in time. And a lot of the times when they do show up in time, they make the situation far worse, which is the whole point.
Right. Right.
So
absolutely
frustrating.
What did you call it? The mental flexibility? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
I have to incorporate that into my vernacular. But the contortions that they go through, The cognitive dissonance is something that, honestly, if they used it for good, it would be one of the most magnificent thinking capacities ever. But they use it to be intentionally obtuse. Like, they use this level of cognitive dissonance to be as dense as they possibly can. And that denseness is ruining America on a level that, whatever. We'll see what happens in this election that's coming up.
Yeah. And thank you to all the people in the comments who are like, this is Willie Horton 2.0. Totally.
That's the one.
That's what we're referring to.
It couldn't get to me.
100%. Early on, when the platform, but also the slogan Defund the Police came out, there were a lot of people criticizing it, saying, maybe I agree with the goals, but you're going to turn people off with this messaging. I always thought that that was overblown, but that was a common refrain. Turns out, not so much. Didn't need to worry about that necessarily. According to new polling, most Americans believe, this is 77%, believe that those who use that phrase really just want to change the way police departments operate. Only 18% believe that people who use this phrase actually want to get rid of police departments. And I would guess, I don't know for sure, I would guess those 18% probably aren't predisposed to be intellectually honest towards Black Lives Matter in general. So, I mean, that is an overwhelming win in terms of messaging, that people get what they're saying.
Yeah. I think we downplayed the intelligence of good faith actors, right? People who are operating in good faith are intelligent enough to sit down and say, okay, I want to say something first. I do mean defund the police, right? I literally mean strip as much funding as you possibly can and keep it small enough to just solve crimes. Just small. The beat cops are not protecting us, right? So defund it. And my position is quite frankly the moderate position amongst people, because my friends to the left of me, who I love and I cherish, they want to abolish the police. Now, that being said, we know that the majority of America is not over here with us. And I know that my job is really to just push the envelope and to push the Overton window as far as I possibly can. In terms of the voters and the people who took that polling, they're intelligent enough to know what the majority of people feel. It is about fundamentally changing policing in this country at a level that we've never considered before. People start screaming, defund the police.
Yeah. No, I agree. When I use the term, I mean massively defund the police, not entirely remove it so that there's no law enforcement. We're in Mad Max, you know, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about having it do what it needs to do and not all the things it doesn't need to do. And it doesn't need to be armed for, you know, street combat in Fallujah and all of that. Exactly. And the thing is, look, I understand I didn't weigh in a ton on the debate about the term early on. Because some people who I really respect, like Cenk Uygur, he was against the term partially because he desperately wants the goals to be achieved, and he worried that it would be an impediment to that. Now, thankfully, it turns out it is not an impediment to that. But anyway, this is good news. I wanted to read a couple of other stats about these protests and what's been going on. Some of it not particularly surprising. But 3 in 10 Americans feel that the actions taken during the recent protests against police and the deaths of Black citizens were fully justified. There's others who believe it's partially justified. That's up from those who, only 17% who said that in early June. So it is trending in the direction of people feeling like, even with all of the negative press coverage of these protests, that what they're doing is fully justified. There's also information like this. Among self-identified Republicans and independents who lean towards the Republican Party, 40% say that racial discrimination is a big problem. This represents a 14-point drop from a few weeks ago. 35% say it's not a problem, which is higher than all prior Monmouth polls on this question. So, since the beginning of the protest, you've lost 30% of Republicans, maybe, say, I used to think it was a problem, but now I don't. That's madness.
Yeah, those are bad faith actors. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the stage where I really have to look through the lens of, did you ever want to negotiate in good faith? Like, did you ever mean, we spend so much time trying to explain things and debate things, and some people sit down to the table and they never intended to be truthful.
Yeah.
They never intended to change their mind with new information. They only intended to get their own political ends met. And I think what we're seeing here are a bunch of people who see, right, they saw the injustice, But because they never intended on dealing in good faith with us in the first place, they would rather change their mind about the structure of racism in this country than to actually give any credence to what we've been saying all this time. Right. So they had the, I think the poll I don't believe were the previous polls. I believe these polls.
Yeah.
These polls, because this is what they really believed all along.
You know, I hadn't been thinking about that. I think you're totally right. So these polls that show that Republicans are less willing to acknowledge racial discrimination just during the protests, what's been going on during that time? What hypothetically could have triggered them to perhaps, as our guest Ben Dixon has been saying, more accurately reflect what they really thought? Well, one of the things is right-wing media has been doing everything they can to get people to not pay attention to the legitimate demands of the protesters. Here's a great example of it.
It's just amazing that all the rich ladies in Aspen and Greenwich think BLM is about ending racism, which obviously all of us are for, when in fact it's a revolutionary group. Maybe the U.S. government could take decisive action and by doing that, make it really clear that this is a terror organization.
That was Tucker Carlson once again declaring Black Lives Matter a terrorist organization. Just casually, as a throwaway line. That wasn't even scripted. He's just chatting with his guest and he says, oh yeah, no, that organization that like 77% of the American public supports, that's a terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda, like ISIS.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously like the clear cut thing to be juxtaposed with that is the fact that they don't see the alt-right, right, as a terrorist organization.
Yep.
They barely see the actual Klan as a terrorist organization. The Boogaloo Boys, they don't see those as terrorist organizations. Yep. When we know, like, and this is, I hate to be repeat the same thing over and over again, but you can't, you're not a good faith actor, right? And when I say that, that means like there's no reason to talk with you anymore.
Yes.
There's no reason to debate with you anymore. There's absolutely no reason for me to be civil with you because you never meant to do right by us in the first place. So when you look at the Boogaloo Boys and you say nothing about them, or the Proud Boys, you say nothing about them, but you label a group that hasn't killed anybody, right? Mm-hmm. That has not killed anybody. You label them as a terrorist organization. That means you have an agenda and that agenda is meant to hurt me. So there's nothing else for us to talk about. How tall is Tucker Carlson? That's what I needed. I need to find out how tall he is. And that's just, you know, we should just know that. I think that's important.
Zach, I don't know, but perhaps someone in the chat can tell us. Totally agree. I didn't want to, but I went on a rant about Tucker Carlson on the show yesterday. His middle name should be Bad Faith, because that is the only way he operates. Yeah. By the way, that comment that we showed you with him saying that BLM is just a terror organization, I'm just going to throw that out as a comment. That's part of a new pattern for him. He recently said that the protesters and Antifa should be marched in front of cameras like MS-13. And he specifically said, and you can go back and watch this, he said, it's because of the perception. As long as we call them protesters, people will think they're legitimate. We have to label them terrorists so that people won't listen to them. He said that in his thing. And I want you to think about that. Saying, these people I disagree with, we need to call them terrorists so that no one will pay attention to them. And they'll be rounded up, they'll be locked up. This is a guy who complains about cancel culture constantly and believes that the free speech rights need to be respected. Now, anyone he disagrees with, he literally wants the federal government to designate them as terrorists so that no one will listen to their political message anymore.
Yeah, yeah. They try to do that. Remember, Trump just did that with Antifa. Right. And then I remember that Trump did that 3 years ago with Antifa.
Yeah.
Right. So they have no problem leveraging the full weight of the government to suppress political speech by giving us these labels that they get to determine. Right. We can't even decide if someone using the N-word is racist. Right.
Yeah.
But they get to decide that people who they just don't like their political speech, that they're terrorist organizations. I found out that Tucker is about 6'1", so I'm going to have to lift my heavy bag like a little bit higher at home, my uppercut bag, and practice this height 6'1", just as an expression of exercise and releasing all the anger that I might have towards him.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people have been saying he's 6'1", but others are saying you should acknowledge he has a dad bod. I mean,
I have a dad bod times two, so you know, we're going to solidarity with dad bods.
That's true.
But Tucker could go to hell.
That's true. Yeah. Let's not vilify the dad bod. I'm working out so that someday I can have a dad bod. I'm working towards it. Not long ago on the show, we talked about a person who drove the car through a barricade, seemingly specifically to target protesters, and killed 24-year-old Summer Taylor. An absolute tragedy. But not a tragedy that apparently is all that rare in America anymore, because these sorts of attacks are happening all the time. And I want to give a ton of credit to a friend of the show, Jesslyn Cook of HuffPost, who's put together a great write-up of how these purposeful vehicular targeting of protesters, vehicular terrorism, let's just call it what it is, has become more and more common. So after the killing of Summer Taylor, hours later, in Indiana, a man in an SUV swerved around police barriers and into a crowd of protesters on a bridge, hitting and dragging 23-year-old Trevor Davis, who was hospitalized. 2 days after that, on Monday night, a driver plowed into protesters in front of a courthouse in Indiana before speeding away with two people desperately clinging to the roof of the car, causing them to fly off. Days later, a man reportedly made a U-turn to get behind a group of protesters near Richmond, Virginia, revved the engine of his truck, and then slammed it into them. Police later reported that he is a self-described state leader of the Virginia Ku Klux Klan. These are all tragedies, and there are many more. All told, there have been at least 66 car attacks nationwide just since George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police on May 25th. We've covered several of them. I had no idea that it had become this common and somehow isn't a national story.
Yeah. Rest in peace to Summer Taylor. That was horrific. I wish I hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, really sending love and solidarity to their family.
Yeah.
I do want to point out that in the minds of people like Tucker Carlson and the right, it's not just Tucker Carlson, but it's the right in this country, and even Donald Trump, the protesters are the terrorists, not the people running them down.
Yep.
That's the kind of country that we live in. And when we have that type, that level of asymmetry in our political conversations, there's two things. We have to double our efforts to convince as many people as we can, but we also have to just, you know, cut the line here, draw the line in the sand with people like Tucker Carlson, because there's nothing left to talk about with you, because you would see someone get hit by a car and call the victim the terrorist and not the driver.
Exactly. Exactly. While defending police departments that even in recent history have charged protesters who were nearly killed in these incidents with crimes, but not the drivers in some cases. Not in all cases. Many of the drivers are facing criminal charges, but in some cases, the police have sided with the drivers themselves. And this is not a new thing. I love Jesslyn Cook's work here. She found that in January 2016, a police sergeant in St. Paul, Minnesota wrote a Facebook comment urging people to run down protesters on MLK Day. Quote, keep traffic flowing and don't slow down for any of these idiots who try and block the street. This is Sergeant Jeff Rothaker. Run them over. Days after Heather Heyer was murdered by a Nazi with his car, Conrad LaRiviere, I believe it is, a Massachusetts officer in Springfield, wrote on Facebook, ha 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 ha, love this. Maybe people shouldn't block roads, after she was killed. And in Seattle this year, the King County Sheriff's Office announced that one officer, who happens to be Governor Jay Inslee's cousin, although I don't think that that necessarily matters, had been placed on administrative leave after posting a picture of a vehicle hitting someone under the commonly shared phrase, quote, all lives splatter, and another line about moving off the road. And so while we are trying to fight back against this wave of domestic terrorism, right-wingers online are sending memes. They have a funny phrase for killing protesters in the street. They think it's funny.
All lives splatter. I don't have it for these people anymore, right? Like, what type of depravity, what level, where do you have to be in your life to find joy in this? Like, you're not a good human being. Let's start there, right? All these people, they have Jesus in their bios, the scriptures in their bio. You know, I'm not slamming faith. I'm a person of faith myself, but I know your faith is full of crap if you find joy and pleasure in people dying. And that's the level of where our hyperpartisanship has gotten. And this is not to draw a false equivalence between Democrats and Republicans, because I think Republicans have gotten to a place where they have lost their humanity altogether. Because if you find joy in people getting killed because they share a different political philosophy than you and they have goals that might inconvenience you a little bit, then you have lost all sense of humanity and your faith is worthless, completely worthless.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think about like those private Facebook groups that were found of police officers like joking about violence against protesters. And I also think about like so here we're talking mainly about regular racists who try to murder these people, and like leading to things like this, for instance, you might recall.
Right, okay. So Eric Chaloux, once again, on the ground.
We played this on the show back, the you know, feels a couple months ago. A truck that thankfully didn't kill hundreds of people, but did his best to. And that is terrorism. We should call that terrorism. But we should also acknowledge how many instances like this did we see.
Exactly. Yeah.
Every time I can't. The police are using the same tactic as the terrorists in some cases. It's madness.
Here's the other thing that America is so twisted. We place the value of buildings and the value of someone's schedule, right? The trucker had to get his delivery to the ports by whatever time. We put the value of that, and we put the value of being mildly inconvenienced over lives, right? They cry when a building burns. Like, everyone freaks out when a building burns, but we become desensitized to people being killed. And this is just really a testament. It's not just about the individual conservatives in isolation. It's about this collective derangement in America that places the value of almost anything over the lives of individuals.
Yeah. God, it's, and the fact that it's not a story, it is literally, you know, for the past couple of years, the preferred tactic of ISIS to kill people internationally, being taken up by domestic terrorists, and no link is drawn by the media between those two things.
None. And that's clearly on purpose.
Yeah. Think about it. Like, you have domestic terrorism rising in America, and the media is effectively running PR for them by refusing to cover the story. Yeah. By giving them the cloak of people not getting what's going on to allow it to continue to spread. Recent Twitter feud we have to comment on. Friend of the show, Nina Turner versus Deborah Messing. And it all started with Kanye West announcing he's going to be running for president. To which Deborah Messing tweeted, "Absolutely, he's playing Jill Stein. He's trying to take young black voters from Biden. It's disgusting." So Nina responded to that, saying, "You just can't stop dipping, can you, Deborah Messing? Your connotation is racist. Black voters are not owned by anyone. Our vote should be earned every election cycle. We can think for ourselves and don't need your help. Sometimes it's best to stay out of family business." That could have been the end of it, but that was not the end of it, because Deborah Messing responded multiple times saying that she expected that Nita would have been smarter and get what's going on, and then sort of implied that she was going to call Stacey Abrams to talk to Nina Turner for her. And then Nina, of course, responded to that. Ben, what did you think about this short feud?
Who is Deborah Messing again? I think she was like an actress point in their life. And, you know, I can't stand these people. The core of it is racist, right? It's racist because, one, you assume black people are just going to, oh, here's a black candidate. Oh, we're going to follow him because we don't care about any issues. We just care about race. So clearly there's a racist connotation there. Then, two, she is suggesting a level of uninformedness that to us really reads like, you think we're stupid, woman. Like, you really think that because Donald Trump isn't too far when we talk about Kanye West, by the way. You think that because Kanye West simply says he's going to do it, that black young people are going to fall? Listen, black young people barely can afford to go to Kanye West concerts, right? His biggest fan base are white people. Mm-hmm. That's where he made his billions of dollars from. And so the problem here is that she is carrying this, I don't like this word, but microaggression type of racism that exists still in the Democratic Party, that so often rears its ugly head and in a fashion that is very insulting to the work of so many people. Last but not least, you're going to call Stacey Abrams on who? Like, first of all, Nina Turner is a grown woman who can do whatever she wants to do and say whatever she wants to say. There's nobody who's going to check her. So if you want her to respect you, you need to respect her. Respect her womanhood. Respect her independence. Respect her thinking. And then just realize that you stepped in it. Sometimes you step in it and you need to take a step back. There's nothing wrong with taking a step back. But her arrogance really pushed it to a limit. And it's really a political arrogance, right? There's a level of political arrogance that wants to be able to command the black vote to do and believe what they tell us to do and will not give us the autonomy that we clearly have.
Yeah. And like, first of all, if you're gonna push in this direction, don't do it against Nina Turner.
What are you thinking?
I mean, that's right up there with like trying to pick a fight with AOC. I don't understand why you do it, but I think that most people looking at this feud, and you should, I'm not gonna read more of the tweets. There's a ton, but everybody go look at it. And Nina Turner gives her a lot of advice, sort of writing from the perspective of what Deborah Messing could be saying to learn from this. That's the thing. Deborah Messing, I'm sure, thinks I'm not a racist. I don't hate black people. I don't hate people who aren't white. But that does not mean that you can't be fundamentally wrong on race. No one is, like, no white person is right on race and they're good and they don't have to worry and they can never make a mistake or anything like that. That's everybody, including me. You can always learn. You can always make mistakes. But you have to be willing to learn, hypothetically. Nina's even trying to help you in the thread. But you can't assume that you're immune. You can't be Bill Maher and think, no, I'm good. I don't need to learn anything. You don't tell me anything. That's not how it works fundamentally.
Listen, it is, and I want to double down on something. It is a level of political arrogance. Like for you to politically think that you have the right to comment on an entire class of people based on your preconceived notions. Like the absurdity of it, right? That's some hubris right there. It's incumbent upon us to take the necessary steps to not be even indirectly racist, accidentally racist, accidentally sexist, accidentally homophobic, whatever it is. It's incumbent on us who actually want to make this world a better place to go through the extra steps. So if you make the mistake, back up on it. But you don't go and try to call the manager. Like, what is Stacey Abrams? Like, who is Stacey Abrams that you're going to call her on Nina Turner? Nina Turner is one of the most dynamic political figures we have in this country. And what she's not going to do is pit two black women against each other. Deborah, you definitely are out of pocket on this one.
Exactly. Like, if it's pointed out to you, just learn. Just learn. Like, and the thing is, by the way, I'm not going to go a ton into detail. I've occasionally been in, like, Ben, I'm sure you do this. You get invited into like Twitter DM groups for activism or for messaging and stuff like that. I've been in groups with Deborah Messing, and virtually everything I've ever seen her tweet, is fine. She seems to have a good heart, good values, good person, all of that. Doesn't mean you can't be wrong. Doesn't mean you don't still have to learn. So this is not like if Deborah Messing is going to watch this, but let's say she did. This is not me like trying to like, haha, I'm going to get some hits by like dogging on you or whatever. That's not what I'm trying to do. You have to be willing to realize when you've made a mistake and when you've gone too far. And that should be abundantly clear at this point.
And it's so right. And it's so easy. If somebody emails me and messages me about something that I said that was sexist and it wasn't my intention, you know what? Back up. Let me back up. Let me consider it. How difficult is that? Because if you're not willing to do that, you are on the road towards conservatism as it is in America right now. The reason conservatism is so far gone is because they have an intention to never, ever change a thing that they do, what they believe. They never intend to apologize for anything. They don't care who they hurt along the way. They're just so stubborn in their ways and in their philosophies that it doesn't matter who they hurt. Whereas I think the intention on our side of the aisle, and honestly, clearly, we know plenty of people who are the exception to this rule, right? We know plenty of people on the progressive liberal side of the equation that are just as crappy as any conservative that you will ever run into. But for those of us who are over here operating in good faith, it's nothing for us to take a step back and say, you know what? I didn't mean to say it like that. You know, I didn't think about it. And maybe you're right. And I'll change my mind on that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's too difficult.
Yeah, we were just talking about that earlier.
Literally.
Like, everybody is ignorant of at least one and probably many groups' experiences and can learn. That's not acknowledging that is not a weakness. That is a strength. It's the only literally the only way to be strong is to be willing to admit what you don't know.
We're talking about the largest mass shooting in the history of the United States.
This is a crazed lunatic.
My brother just killed 58 people. My dad was on the 10 most wanted FBI list. We're not normal people. Ah! Steve gambled $1.6 million at the Mandalay in the week before he did this. He was really, really angry with the gaming industry.
What you saw was an excerpt from the trailer of Money Machine, upcoming documentary delving into that horrific shooting. And we are very lucky to be joined by the director of Money Machine, Ramsey Dennison, joins us on the Damage Report now.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. That was quite a trailer. I'm very glad that you can come on to talk about your documentary, because I'm going to be completely honest with you. It's been several years now since the shooting, and some of the, even the developments that, if people go and watch the full trailer, you reveal a bit there, came enough after the shooting that even me being a part of the media, I didn't see. There's a lot that many people still don't know about this shooting. And so I sort of want to start there. When you initially decided to have this be your follow-up, you'd previously done another documentary, you chose this. What was it about it that piqued your interest initially?
Well, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. As you said, my previous movie, What Happened in Vegas, was also from that movie. That movie made a lot of noise in Las Vegas. It won some awards and really got out there and was well-known, got a lot of press. So because of that, I came into contact with a lot of retired law enforcement officers, former LVMPD sergeants and lieutenants, who admired what I was doing by pointing out corruption in the department. Some of these people, the reason they had left the department was because they thought the leadership was corrupt. And so they saw my movie, What Happened in Vegas, and I started getting messages. You know, I thought just the opposite would happen. I thought these people were gonna bully me and, you know, former cops, because the movie was pointing out corruption. But what happened instead is that these people became friends. And I'm talking about several retired former LVMPD sergeants, lieutenants, some of whom are in the film. And so I developed a relationship with them. And to this day, I still call them friends, good friends. And so after 1 October happened, I started getting phone calls from these guys. And they were telling me, and this is coming straight from the department that they were still well connected to. You know, they talk to people who are, you know, so they still have many friends in the department. And they were telling me that a lot that was going on with 1 October was not how it was being presented, that there was a lot of things being left out. And one of the reasons for that was that Sheriff Joe Lombardo had an election coming up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is an election year. And this was an international event. It was the biggest one of the biggest stories of the year. And they couldn't have some of the LVMPD incompetence come out on a national stage. I mean, it had been, you know, the previous shooting where there'd been an officer who was exposed for like being a coward. And I think it was either the Texas shooting or the Florida shooting.
I think it was Stoneman Douglas, I believe.
Yeah. They got horrible publicity for that. And so one of the things that Sheriff Joe Lombardo attempted to cover up that I'd heard directly from the department was the fact that Officer Cordell Hendricks on the night of 1 October was actually in position to do something about the shooting. And instead of doing that, he sat in the hallway like a little baby shaking, and body cam footage emerged of that later. But this was way later, you know, so it wouldn't hurt. Yeah.
That's one of the most fascinating things is that I don't remember that footage coming out, because the gap was so significant between the actual event. And we've seen this sort of thing before, where body camera footage, which could have been released almost immediately, like in Chicago, we had that as well. And so this isn't just a story of a horrific, tragic act of mass violence. This is really about the context of money, political considerations, and how that interfered with people understanding the event, right?
Very perceptive take on it. It's, whereas some documentaries might be exclusively about a mass shooting, this is about money and the mass shooting. And it's about how Vegas, which is a money machine, had to make this go away as fast as possible. And it's about the people who helped them do that, you know, the LVMPD and how the police department and MGM Resorts International work together to not only prevent information coming out that exposed the LVMPD's incompetence that night, but also MGM's liability in all this. That's the other big thing. MGM's the most powerful corporation in Nevada. They're the largest employer. And the bottom line is Stephen Paddock was able to get over 20 guns up there. And the MGM Resorts International had over 200 cameras out that night, wow. Surveillance cameras. And they, most people don't know this, and that's not an accident. You're talking about a shooting where 58 people died, hundreds were injured. You know, this settlement should have gone into the billions. And you know, and I believe that if the LVMPD and the MGM hadn't worked together to prevent information from coming out, that it would have been, the settlement would have been a lot higher than it was. And the truth is, MGM had far more culpability in this than they wanted the public to know. And they used their power and money, and they used a corrupt sheriff on a corrupt police department to help them do that.
You know, in a lot of cases where cities are the site of a horrific attack like this, you'll have some sort of community campaign of solidarity and trying to recover after a horrific event. And obviously in this case, you had that, the hashtag Vegas Strong was this big movement. So to tell me about that.
Vegas Strong was a con, and it was a con because they rolled it out almost immediately. I mean, they had it ready the next day. And you had a guy who was running for governor, Steve Sisolak, kind of became the face of Vegas Strong. And if you watch the press conferences, you'll see, it's very odd actually, you'll see this guy in the background, Steve Sisolak. He wasn't governor yet, but he used this to help become governor. So Vegas Strong became like a way for him to get his face on TV, to get him, you know, international events, worldwide publicity doesn't come along very often. And he used this event to get that. And the shady part of this, it would be one thing if that money went to the victims in a timely manner. But as Money Machine reveals, during the first 5 months, less than $20,000 of the over 10 million raised actually made its way to the victims. Okay, wow. So the thing to understand is when people are injured, they need money now. I mean, their mortgage is due now. Their car payments due now. They got to have groceries for their kids now. And they didn't care about it. What Steve Sisolak and Vegas Strong cared about was getting FaceTime. And this guy, who is sadly now the governor, was too busy jumping in front of cameras, getting his face on national television to actually make sure that those funds made their way to the people who needed them. And I've talked to people in tears who were there that night, who have lost their cars, you know, because they couldn't pay. Just harrowing stories. And in my opinion, that shouldn't have happened. It really should have been about the victims. And Vegas Strong just kind of became a con. It's a glib con, you know, like to make the country feel, you know, and it was just Vegas doing what Vegas does best, putting a false face on something that's really about greed. I mean, Vegas exists to take your money, you know, and Vegas Strong was another con perpetrated on the American public. And even to this day, there are not really solid records on how that money was distributed. But one thing's very clear. Steve Sisolak, now the governor, and yes, I called him Sisolak, that he used Vegas Strong to become the governor. And the victims of the mass shooting should be outraged at how this grandstanding, glad-handing politician used them and then turned their back.
Yeah, I'm curious, based on what you learned about the amount of power that some of these companies have in the area and the sort of the rush to at least get back to normal or make people think that you're safe, you can get back to normal. I'm curious, in the past couple of months of the pandemic, you know, the mayor of Las Vegas very early on announced that they would be reopening, had a few very bizarre interviews to that effect. It is now reopened despite the concerns that having people fly in and fly out, you know, all around the country could be dangerous. Does it really surprise you at all the way that Las Vegas has tried to get back to normal before it really seems like it's safe considering what you've learned?
No, that's not surprising. But what is surprising is that a mayor with an IQ of 2 could actually run a city, even one is like Las Vegas. And I think when you saw that interview with Carolyn Goodman, you saw a very dumb individual who cares about one thing, money, and protecting the people who put her in there. And that's what you know, it's a very odd interview. It's just like, it's like, okay, you know, just get people back, get them on the machines. Who cares if they get COVID and take it back to Kansas City or Baltimore or Detroit and spread it around the country and you know, make the problem 7 or 8 times worse? Because money, 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 cash, cash, cash. And that's what Carolyn, that's the one thing that the mayor with a 2 IQ understands is money and cash. And actually, just yesterday, I saw an article that a lot of Vegas is actually getting ready to shut down again.
Really?
Because I think there are other states who believe that they've handled the situation so carelessly that if you try to fly into, I think I saw an article about Illinois, like if you try to fly, like there are certain states that are on a list where you have to be quarantined before you enter the state. So there was obviously a big rush in Nevada to like open up the casinos and get the money machine going again. And it appears that it might have been premature because just yesterday I saw an article about how it might be shutting back down.
Wow, so that's amazing. And again, lives on the line, like in the documentary. Money Machine, Director Ramsey Dennison, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.